Shrink Wrap Radio number 287, E-Psychotherapy with Dr. Ofer Zur.
And now it's time for Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again.
Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My guest today is Dr. Ofer Zur, a licensed psychologist and forensic consultant practicing in Sebastopol, California. He's the director of the Zur Institute, which offers over 130 online courses, including 5 courses for Shrink Wrap Radio. Today we'll be discussing psychotherapy conducted via such non-traditional means as email, phone, and Skype. You can find out more information about Dr. Zur's background by going to our show notes at shrinkwrapradio.com. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Ofer Zur, welcome back to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, Dave, for having me back with you on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, last time you were here, we spoke about PTSD and trauma. And today, we're going to discuss something else that you've written about as telehealth. And I'm referring to here as virtual therapy. Is that okay?
No. It isn't okay, because virtual reality or virtual therapy is only one aspect of telehealth. But I think you're right in the most general term, digital or internet-based or non-face-to-face will be more better than virtual.
Yeah, I saw an article you wrote and saw that it's been called telemental health, which is kind of a mouthful, telepsychology, e-counseling, e-psychotherapy, telepsychiatry, internet-based psychotherapy, teleanalysis, and other similar names.
You got the list very well. You're right. It's called all kind of names.
Okay, well, now you can add virtual psychotherapy to the list.
Okay, I'll definitely do that before we end this interview. My web lady will upload it.
Okay. Now, a couple of things aroused my interest in this topic, or perhaps I should say trend. I don't know, maybe we'll call it a trend later. I think it's probably been a couple of years now, at least, that I've wanted to talk to somebody who knew something about this topic, because I would go to websites like psychologytoday.com or mentalhelp.net, and I would see all these ads for people who want to do counseling or psychotherapy over the phone. Now, you and I remember the day when you couldn't even have an ad advertising your services as a psychologist.
I know. It used to be, marketing used to be unethical.
Yeah, so now I feel like Rip Van Winkle or something, like I've been asleep for 20 years and something's going on that I don't know about. And so I've been wondering about the legal and ethical status of that. So tell us a little bit, and then I'll tell you another thing that piqued my interest about this.
So I'm sure there are a long list of things that piqued your interest, and if not, I'll help pick it up today by introducing you to. It's a new and fascinating field and mode of delivering assessment, treatment, prevention of mental disorders, and a lot of other mental health services. And of course, we have already 50 years of delivering suicide prevention online, highly successful through suicide crisis and suicide hotline.
Yes, so my first job out of my PhD program was actually to supervised training of people to work a suicide hotline.
So you were not asleep at all. You were actually ahead of the curve. You know, you're awake 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And so we know the efficacy of non-face-to-face intervention. Mm-hmm. And now what we are, we have this bursting technology, the internet. And people can do right now a psychotherapy using chats, using emails, using video conferencing, whether it's Skype or something safer than that, but the same idea, kind of a Skype. And so we have this explosion on one hand. And then I'll map for you the forces of the field in the field a little bit quickly. And then the other part, we have all this digital immigrants like you and I, but you and I are actually enthusiastic digital immigrant, and we have most of our colleagues are reluctant digital immigrant that somehow are reluctant to do therapy via video conferencing or via chats or via emails or via other virtual realities that you mentioned earlier, virtual. So, or like something like Second Life type.
Yes, yes.
Second Life is not protected enough, but the idea is that you do, and people did open shop on Second Life and provide therapy. We can talk about confidentiality and ethics later on if you want to, but the technologies are there. But there's a lot of resistance among our colleague to embrace new. We are supposed to be in a field that embraces the new, but we actually, as you and I know, we are highly resistive.
Well, has there been organizational resistance, institutional resistance from, say, the American Psychological Association, the American Psychiatric Association, the Marriage and Family Counselor Association? Are these organizations embracing it, studying it, rejecting it? What?
They are not rejecting it and they are not obstructing it. But some has been more embracing than others. Like Ohio Psych Association came already 2 years ago with their own telehealth ethical rules, so mm-hmm. to speak. So, and then we see new organizations that are a telemental health organization and the online institute, online therapy institute. So we have a lot of new organizations, professional organizations that are not waiting for the APA of the world and the CANFT and ACA to take the leadership here. So we have people who are highly enthusiastic and highly informed about this topic are helping to move the field. So we don't see organizational resistance, but we see kind of sluggish adaptation by some and more enthusiastic by others.
Well, that's interesting. It's like one of those situations, and I can't think of any other examples off the top of my head, but I know they're out there, of the technology moving so fast that it's ahead of the organizations, it's ahead of the legislatures, and so on.
Oh, it's so ahead, but this is what happened with the field of technology in general. A girl sending her top 14, 15, 16 years old, sexting to her boyfriend, and he wanted to see her without her shirt on, so she sent him a picture revealing parts of her body, and the DA, a 70 years old DA, decided this is a distributing child pornography over the internet, and takes the girl to court, or the boy who sent it to his friends.
Yeah.
And so the legislator is just so behind. It's not a word. Then we don't have rules about cyberbullying. So sometimes they are implying old rules inappropriately, and sometimes they don't have enough teeth to deal with issues such as the girl in your town of Petaluma who killed a toddler got 5 days in jail, killing a toddler, hurting her mother while texting as she was driving, and they were on a pedestrian walk. And So the newspaper this morning in your town is 5 days. This is what she got in Petaluma.
Right, I know.
In court.
It's
shocking, you know. I mean, here is it's a second degree. It's a manslaughter, I can imagine, charge. I'm not sure, but I think it must have been. The baby died, and she got 5 days.
You know, it's against the law, as you know, here in California, to be using your cell phone while you're driving, at least, you know, holding it up to your head or entering text or something
absolutely.
Like that.
Absolutely.
And I'll be on the freeway, and I'm looking in my rearview mirror, and I see people, you know, who are talking on their cell phone, and I get very nervous. I want to get away.
Yeah. I think talking cell phone is one thing. Texting is much worse than that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Now, another thing that piqued my interest in this topic was an article in the New Yorker magazine. It was in the January 10, 2011, for anybody who's interested, January 10, 2011, New Yorker. It's an article written by an Evan Osnos. It's called Letter from China, Meet Dr. Freud. And in the course of this article, they described some psychoanalysts who are doing psychoanalysis with people in China who want to learn about psychoanalysis. So they're actually getting a training analysis, I guess it would be called. And, you know, I think of psychoanalysis is supposed to be like the most conservative branch of mental health.
Psychoanalysis is a paradox in some regard. It's definitely has been the most reluctant to change in some regard, even though we see the new psychodynamic evolution and the interpersonal psychology, psychiatry. It's just very exciting how they're embracing the interpersonal part and the yes. relational in psychiatry. But then if you think about the origin of psychoanalysis, where there was no eye contact, you can easily make the argument that they set the stage. I've never said it before in public, so you're the first to hear.
All right.
They were the first to set the stage, for example, for e-therapy or for phone therapy, because in classic psychoanalysis, there is no eye contact. The therapist can read perhaps the patient body language from afar or from behind, so they're probably missing some cues as well, because they're sitting behind the client on a seat while the client laying on the couch. So the non-eye-to-eye interaction that we right now have in phone therapy, virtual therapy, chats using text, using emails in telehealth, that it's so common right now, in some regard, you can say have the foundation or the legitimacy in psychoanalysis without the eye contact.
You heard it here, folks, a Shrink Wrap Radio exclusive. That's a good point. That's an interesting point.
Now, it is an interesting paradox. But again, go back to our kind of the original question. The field is exploding with possibilities. It started with medicine. So instead of sending a nurse for 400 round trip in Alaska and the weather permitting, or in Utah or somewhere else, she can measure blood pressure and she can take vital signs distantly. She can do a complete interview. Now they're doing remote surgeries on the aircraft carrier and et cetera, et cetera. So the field of medicine have moved there.
Yeah.
For example, you don't need to move murderers in a bus to the local hospital. They can treat them right now via telehealth remotely with only a technician that perhaps will take their blood pressure or their heartbeat, and the doctor will be in the hospital.
Yeah, and we've been reading about this sort of thing in the news for some time. But is psychotherapy different somehow?
In psychotherapy, you can make the argument it's much more conducive to telehealth because you don't need it to take blood pressure. You don't need it to have an intrusive techniques. You don't need to operate and to to stitch people up or to cut people up. You don't need to have x-rays. It can be done easily remotely, but much easier. We are relying on the spoken word primarily. And it's perfect for us. And again, going back to your training with suicide prevention, it's proved to be effective, saved hundreds of thousands of people's lives over the years. Many people use this hotline as ongoing therapy, as you know. So we are in a field that actually is more conducive to digital application than any other field of medicine.
Well, that's an interesting point. And I do have to concede also that psychotherapists and counselors, as a result, have become much more transparent. When I go to these ads at sites like psychologytoday.com, the therapists list their qualifications, so that in the old days, you went to the phone book. If you were a mental health consumer, you went to the phone book and kind of chose somebody blindly, or maybe you asked a friend and they told you somebody who they thought they heard was maybe good or not.
Or your physician, or you may have.
Yeah, who knew nothing. And now you go on the internet and you can really find out quite a bit about the person who's potentially going to be delivering these services, either in person, you can find that out these days, but also particularly in terms of on these phone call therapists. And I think most of them also, and they may have some testimonials on their site. I'm not sure if they do or not, actually. Or if
what you're referring to is a bigger phenomenon of how the internet has changed our sense of self. Asia, my daughter, as you know, you collaborated so beautifully with her. So it's Asia Zur. She is a UC Berkeley, 27 years old, UC Berkeley graduate in philosophy, one of these super brainy, smart girl.
Yeah, she is.
And sweet. And so we are writing a book about it. So what you are referring right now with this level of transparency has actually meaning in a bigger context. The internet created a change of a transparency to everybody. That means I can Google you right now and find things that you didn't post online.
Yeah, that's true.
And I can Google you and create even more intrusive search. And if you are perhaps stupid enough to get me to get you join on your Facebook, I'll find more information. But then I can pay $20, $30, $40 to anybody who will do a online intrusive illegal search in some regard, that can find out, you know, how much you own your house, have you been divorced before, what your cell phone records, what your criminal records. So the internet created a culture of transparency that now consumers are expecting to know a lot about the heart surgeon, and about the car salesman, and about the optometrist, and definitely about the mental health worker. So what you reflected here is that what you see online, bigger form of transparency, it's not anymore, I give you my name, my fees, and my degree. You go to my website and you find out my relationship to death and why did I climb Kilimanjaro and what drew me into going to China. You'll find all these things and you will choose me because you like it, or you will not choose me because you don't like it. So transparency is a bigger, the name of the game, much bigger than psychotherapy, but it definitely affects what clinicians must provide in order to survive in the 21st century. It's a new game, but wow, it's a derivative of the change of the internet that started.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also requires of the psychotherapist now to be more of a marketer than ever before. Would you say that's true?
You know, I've been teaching marketing for over 30 years now, and I think that we always needed to be marketers. And this is why psychotherapy in private practice have so many people struggling. We just never learned about it. If we are really old, we were taught it was unethical. And we always failed now, I think what we see is a younger therapist, what we call the digital natives, the people who were born into these digital technologies and had a Facebook page or MySpace page already at a very young age. They are used to this transparency, and when and it's easy to market online. It takes any high school dropout to have a web page within a half an hour or 20 minutes. So it's easier. It was always necessary. We always haven't done it, and now it's changing.
Yeah, I am of that generation where I was taught in graduate school that it was unethical, and so, you know, was very unprepared for this changing environment in some ways. Well, let's get back to some of the legal issues. I gather that right now it's a state-by-state situation, and you mentioned Ohio. So, for example, what sorts of rules or requirements have Ohio or other states that you're aware of instituted to regulate, control, limit, whatever?
Very the issue of cross-state line is one of the hottest topics that you are really right to bring up. What happened is that nothing changed in some regard in state law. You and I, because we are licensed in California, we were never allowed to see clients who reside in Texas or in Ohio or New York, because all these states have laws, and all other states have laws that says that in order to treat somebody in Florida, in Texas, you need to be licensed in Texas.
Right.
Nothing changed. The question the telehealth brought up to the question, if I talk to a client via a phone or Skype in Texas, does therapy happens in my study in California, in my office in California, in the client's home where he's by his computer in Texas, or in both, or in neither, or in cyberspace? So this is a million-dollar question of where does therapy take place. Right now, at the beginning, at the end of 2011, we say proceed with caution. If your clients travel around the world, it's really okay. And residency is still in California. My clients will go fly to Tokyo. I'm working with pilot or engineers. It's not a problem. People go on vacation to Hawaii. You can continue to talk to them by phone or video conferencing. And this would be, it'd be okay because their primary resident is still in California. If they move to another state, this is where the debate is about. You need to proceed with caution. You need to see what the rules of the state where they move to. And the question of still when therapy is taking place is a looming question. But we say proceed with a lot of caution, get consultation, but don't just blindly continue to start treating somebody in another state. But what happened, for example, if a client that you have seen for 4 years is going to college and she doesn't want to see another therapist, she would like to continue to talk to you via video conferencing or on the phone. Where is her residency? Is she still in California where she is visiting every other month and Christmas vacation and or the entire summer? Or is her residency is in Oregon State right now where she goes to school? So this is all cutting-edge questions that we often do not have the answer. What happened to a lot of therapists, they're feeling very anxious when they don't know the answer. They don't know how to tolerate gray zone. And we don't have a true case study for that. We have case studies on both sides, one single case study on each side of the debate, which means we have nothing really. So this is a big question. Proceed with caution. This is one of the wonderful new dilemmas. And of course, licensing boards are so slow to adapt. As you mentioned earlier, as a legislator, it's just so slow to adapt. So nurses have easy rules of mobility. Psychologists and social workers and counselors and MFTs do not.
Well, among other specialties, you're also a forensic psychologist. And so this makes me wonder, you know, when you and I first got out of graduate school, You didn't really have to carry liability insurance, or if you did, it was really very cheap, particularly compared to physicians. As time has gone on, liability insurance has become pretty costly because people have brought suits against psychologists and other kinds of psychotherapists, and so the rates have gone up. I guess some people have succeeded in the suits that they've brought. Have there been any suits or legal actions against people practicing telemental health?
Let me answer it in two steps. First of all, I will respectfully disagree with your first part of the statement. When you're going to see your orthopedic surgeon, do you know how much they pay for their malpractice insurance?
I'm under the impression it's huge.
It's huge, like $90,000.
Wow, about. That's even huger than I would
have
guessed.
And if you go to doctors who do deliveries or a gynecologist and deal with pregnancies, they pay also around $80,000-$90,000.
Right.
MFTs in California pay about $400-$500 or $600. Social workers paying $400 a year. You and I pay about $1,300 a year. So what does it tell you? That the range for mental health go between $400 and $1,300 compare to risky thing where people are being sued. It tells you that we are not being sued. We are rarely being sued for the MFTs who are paying $400, $500, $600 a year, or counselors around the country. The $400 barely covers the cost of paper a year in administrative. That means there are no real successful lawsuits. Even our $1,300 is not, it does not cover much. So okay. First of all, so it's not true what you said, that we are being increasingly high sued because our rates are very, very low. But let's go now to the second part of the question. Was it clear this part of kind of, let's a number, the actuary numbers say whether we're being sued or not. If we were sued, we would have paid $10,000 a year, $20,000 a year, but we're not.
Okay.
The second part that you ask, I'm not aware of lawsuits that were handed or court ruling, except this very bizarre case of a psychiatrist from Colorado who prescribed to a California client, and the client committed suicide. So it was kind of very odd and barely a case study. And there's a case study that actually supports the idea of cross-state line too, an APA, American Psychological Association, American psychologist is going to come up with an article, I think, that will cover some of this area. So no, we do not have legal action. I'll tell you why. If I'm going to treat this client in Texas, is it state of Texas is going to bother to extradite me to Texas because I, God forbid, told the client there how to deal with anxiety. So I'm not going to pay, I don't know, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 to try to extradite me for nothing. The state of California doesn't have any ruling over what I did with a client in Texas because this is not, it's not a California resident.
Hmm.
So there's no really much.
Well, what if the, let's say the parents of a client who committed suicide or who felt sexually violated or some other kind of ethical infraction, couldn't the parents bring a private suit across state lines?
They can, but then the issues will be not necessarily practicing without license, but was it substandard care?
Right.
And harm,
yes,
will be. Now, the other part, that once you mentioned forensic, I'll answer kind of a question that you kind of didn't really ask. What we see right now, a lot of forensic evidence that come via Facebook and other websites. So there was this young man, and he got drunk driving, and the judge agreed to a plea to give him 1 year to go to AA. And the prosecutor in sentencing introduced a Facebook page, one page on Facebook on the night of the drunk driving when he got dressed with a shirt says a jailbird. Anyway, he made fun of being caught drunk driving. The judge gave him 1 year in jail. One picture of Facebook.
Yeah.
Got him. So we see increasing amount of forensic evidence that come, and that also relate to therapists. Emails are very easily transported, kind of become part of the records for therapists. Not only emails, I know text can be transcribed. Sometimes voicemail are being automatically transcribed. Again, there are issue of confidentiality here. So in some regard, let's go back to the big picture of telehealth. Telehealth is exploding. The train left the station. People provided by the thousands online, some of them are licensed, some of them are not. There are issues of cross-state line that still need to be resolved. The issue of confidentiality that still need to be resolved. People argue whether Skype is HIPAA compliant or not. And because people love to use Skype, it's free, it's available. We are using it right now. You can teach somebody how to use Skype in 3 seconds. Actually, who doesn't know how to use Skype? So is Skype HIPAA compliant or not? We don't know the answer for that. It's heated debate.
We have international listeners who might not be familiar with HIPAA, H-I-P-P-A. I can't remember what it stands for. Maybe you do.
Doesn't matter. It's some American regulation around privacy. It's a long name.
Yeah, okay. And probably Health Information Privacy Act. Oh, Patient Privacy Act. I'll bet that's it. Health Information Patient Privacy Act.
Accountability in the middle there too. It doesn't matter.
Okay. is the current situation then that the HIPAA issue is up in the air? What about record keeping data?
I think the issue of HIPAA is very important to when it comes to virtual reality use. For example, we have, before we even answer the question, let's just make sure the listener know we have thousands of research and articles that shows the efficacy of telehealth to treat trauma. They have been treating trauma through virtual reality for veterans in Afghanistan and Iraq for years and years, highly effective. Telehealth has been effective with treating people's depression. They've been effective with people's agoraphobia. You can imagine somebody doesn't leave the house, so it's a perfect medium for them to be using telehealth. If the therapist doesn't want to come to their house, makes it much more expensive, so it's cheaper, and the sessions are often shorter. So we have the treatment of anxiety and depression and post-traumatic stress disorder and many other conditions. We have the research to show that telehealth is often as effective and sometimes even more effective than face-to-face. Now, therapists don't like to hear it because this is what they got used to. And you know, when therapists don't like to hear something, you know what they say? If they don't agree, they say it's unethical. We don't know how to disagree very well. But the fact of the matter is that people doing therapy via email, via video conferencing, even via chat or via text. For example, last week I texted a client, and every time when he gets very upset, he can read my text, even in the middle of dinner or in the morning when he get up, and it helps him regulate, emotionally regulate. How accessible is that?
I was going to ask you if you are doing e-psychotherapy yourself.
I integrate it into my face-to-face therapy primarily. Just because with the way I work, so I'll use apps or chats or email or phone in conjunction to face-to-face therapy. But telehealth by itself can stand without the face-to-face, without ever seeing the client, which I have done. I've done phone therapy with clients. I have a gay minister in Northern California that wouldn't want to see any local therapist. It feels too ashamed, too embarrassed. And besides, the good therapists were part of his congregation.
That's a good example.
So he wanted to go as far as he can to work with somebody. I work with another engineer in LA only via the phone. This is already 10 years ago or 15 years ago. And I was doing, and so I was doing telehealth then via the phone. Now in California, it's not considered by the state telehealth phone therapy. It's belongs still in the old fashioned in person. Don't ask me why. Each state kind of has its own definition. So phone does not belong into telehealth. But for the discussion today, we'll lump it together there. But
is, each is state, phone okay in California?
Actually, telehealth, we have one of the states that we have a good telehealth laws, and it's become a part of the, it's a standard of care right now. It's part of the standard of care. It's within the standard of care. To practice telehealth in California. So we have laws about it. We have forms that clients need to fill up. For example, it attend to issue of verification. Some of the concern with telehealth that you asked me earlier is how do you know if you are on a chat or you do it via text or you do it via email? How do you know if it's a young woman or an older man on the other side of the line? How do you verify it? If you do teleconference, they can put the ID to the camera. But between you and I have never ID'd a client in my life in a face-to-face therapy either. So I know their generally their age. I know their gender. I know their ethnicity just for the way they look. But I don't know sometimes other information about them, like address and stuff. Anyways, there's concern with telehealth of verification, and it's very important with young people, whether they are at the age that they can give consent to psychotherapy or not. Then there are issues about emergency contacts. What happens if a client is suicidal and they're halfway around the world? Are you familiar with a local ER and the local psych units in Germany or in Thailand if you work with somebody via Skype or type technology or on the phone? So there are issues about that you need to address. And this is why we have informed consent with clients that often they fill it up online, that explain to them the risk and benefit of telehealth. And informed consent is not just for them to sign, but it's also to talk to them as necessary. So California, for example, gave us forms that all clients need to sign before they engage in telehealth. Very reasonable.
That's interesting. I wasn't aware of any of that since I'm not practicing now. I had a question in mind, and now I've just lost it. It'll come back to me.
So, again, some of the issues, if you want to recap, is Skype. Use Skype, whether it's easy and free and accessible and familiar, but is it HIPAA compliant? Thousands of therapists are using it. The issue of cross-state line will ultimately be changed as the licensing board will be run perhaps by younger people, and the legislator will be run by younger people who are. But it's kind of the part of the American spirit to control what happened within your state. The issue of virtual realities are fascinating. A lot of people having right now cloud storage for their records, and many of them are HIPAA compliant. That means a high level of privacy and confidentiality. Insurance is slow to embrace mental health.
Oh, yes, that's a good question I wanted to ask.
Medicare and Medicaid kind of have started doing a lot of reimbursement for medical. They see the benefits and how much cheaper it is. Again, a nurse driving, hundreds of miles to see patients rather to do a home visit rather than to do it via remote technologies. They are. It's a little bit slower when we come to insurance billing and find the correct CPT codes for telehealth. It's evolving fast, and my belief that the insurance will see that they may be able to pay for 20 minutes or half an hour telehealth with a lower rate, much lower rate, they'll pay for 50 minutes. A psychotherapy in office. It will reduce, of course, the overhead for therapists. And the younger generation are on the run. So they're going to do it fast, and they're going to do it from wherever they are with the iPads or with a smartphone. They're going to do Skype on the iPhone or video conferencing on the iPhones or FaceTime on the iPhones. So this will change in the coming years. Therapy will be probably shorter and perhaps on demand, and they will be on the go. And perhaps the therapist who can be on the go as well as the client. We talk about state licensing boards. The federal laws are changing in regard to Medicare and Medicaid. So we see state and federal laws are changing, and we see a lot of more research how to use virtual reality with PTSD, how to use a phone or video conferencing with anxiety. And as a baby boomer are growing old, and we want the services how we want the services, that will also add to the demand for telehealth. Needless to say that the young ones who do the friendship and do the schooling and do the gaming and do the socializing and make love online, they are also going to do sex online. I'm not sure if it's love, but it's sex at least, what they do online. They're going to do also psychotherapy online.
That's a great place for us to wrap it up. Is there anything else that you'd like to say? I mean, I think that's a great close, but I don't want to cut you off.
You know, I think the train left the station, and we have a world that can become richer, and we can use the internet, and I think it's a very conducive for telehealth. I'm personally very excited about it and about the possibility. Some will prefer face-to-face. Many of the young ones who spend so much of their lives online will be benefited with telehealth online or on the go because it fits with their lifestyle, so we can reach a bigger audience and help more people.
Well, it's really going to be fascinating to watch this unfold, and your prediction makes sense to me. So, Dr. Ofer Zur, thanks for being my guest again today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
And again, we can mention the tons of free online resources on this topic at thezurinstitute.com. So it's zurinstitute.com, tons of research up there.
Okay. I'll make sure that there's a link in the show notes for that.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you so much. You're cutting edge in your own way.
Thank you. I really enjoyed this conversation with Ofer. He has so much energy and enthusiasm. He's originally from Israel. And I hate to engage in stereotypes, but I have to say this seems to be a quality of all the Israelis I've met so far. Ofer seems to have more energy than he can contain, and he's had lots of adventures in his life, including climbing Mount Kilimanjaro with his son, which you heard him refer to today, and his experiences in the Israeli army, which he mentioned in the previous interview. Don't be surprised if you hear him here again in the future. Also, Ofer mentioned his daughter, Azia. I haven't met her in person, but she's been helping me online, getting the Jungian courses in order. We've developed a real friendship online. She's very open and supportive, and I'm looking forward to meeting her in person at some point. So I do hope that you both enjoyed and learned from the second interview with Dr. Ofer Zur. He's the one who has made it possible for me to offer many of these podcast interviews for continuing education credit through the Zur Institute. I'm referring here to my CE courses on positive psychology, on dreams, and several on Jungian psychotherapy. Links to those you can most easily find on the shrinkwrapradio.com website. However, there are currently about 130 courses available online through the Zur Institute, including one or more on telehealth or telemental health, and you can find the whole catalog at www.zurinstitute.com, and Zur is spelled Z-U-R.
I've been laying on this couch, babe. I've been laying here so long, just waiting for Dr. Dave, babe, to play his shrink wrap radio song. Oh, he plays it so sweet and he plays it so warm. Shrink wrap radio, it's a harbor from the storm. You know he speaks to your mind, babe, but he's really speaking to your soul. Talking shrink wrap radio, babe. You know that's just the way that he rolls. At the end of the day, you know what you'll find. Like Dr. Dave said, babe, it's all in your mind. At the end of the day, you know what you'll find. Like Dr. Dave said, it's all in your mind.
Hello, everyone out there in shrink wrap radio land. Well, it's a rainy day here in Northern California, and I know I said that I was going to be doing the shrink wrap radio episodes less frequently, something like every other week, but call me compulsive, or better yet, call me enthusiastic, because I'm putting this episode out sooner than that. My announced intention was to do it every other week, alternating with Wise Counsel podcasts. Now, the Wise Counsel podcasts come out sometime near the 1st and the 15th of the month. So right now, there is a new Wise Counsel podcast up, and it's with Dr. John Duffy about his book, The Available Parent. And I really liked interviewing him. I felt a lot of rapport with him. And as you know, if you're a parent, being a parent these days is not easy. And Dr. Duffy has very sound advice about the importance of being available to one's kids, particularly preteens and teens, those difficult years. And he's got wonderful tips for doing that. So I really urge you to check out the latest Wise Counsel, where you can not only listen to the interview, but there is always a transcript with each of the Wise Counsels.
Hey, this is me, Dr. Dave, testing out my new iPhone app and its ability on the iPhone to leave a message directly for Dr. Dave.
Yes, that was me testing out one of the features of the new Shrink Wrap Radio app that's available for the iPhone and for the Android phone. And one of the capabilities that it has is the ability to leave a voicemail message for me right from the phone very easily. No number to dial or to remember. You just click on the button and you can leave a message. Also, there are buttons that take you to our website and to Twitter and to Facebook. So there's a lot of cool features in this app. I was frustrated for a while because I was having difficulty getting it to run on my iPhone 4 that I recently upgraded to iOS 5.0.1. So finally, I backed up the iPhone and erased everything on it and then restored it from iTunes, and it works fine now, and I'm able to see my app. Turns out that the iPhone version of the app is not quite what I expected. I thought that people would be able to go into the iTunes store and do a search on Shrink Wrap Radio, and there they would find the Shrink Wrap Radio app, a dedicated app. It turns out that the provider that I've used, and they have been able to produce this at a very reasonable cost, which I previously shared at $20 a month, whereas if I had gone to a traditional developer, it turns out it would have cost maybe a couple $1,000s to get that kind of app that I was envisioning. The way this app works is you first have to download a sort of container that has a number of this company's apps in it, the company being Wizard Media. So you download the free app from the iTunes store, which is called Podcast Box. That's two different words, podcast space box. Once you've got that on your phone for free, then you can search for Shrink Wrap Radio within that app. And you can do that most easily if you just swipe to the right to get the text entry screen, and then you start typing Shrink and my app will come up. And then you have the opportunity to purchase the app for $2.99. And then that app will reside in your copy of Podcast Box. And anytime that you want to listen to the show, you just open up Podcast Box and there it is. And not just the most recent episode, however, but all of the episodes. So that's one of the great advantages of this, is that you can listen to the whole catalog of now 287 shows. So I do hope that all you iPhone owners out there will rush out and purchase the Shrink Wrap Radio iPhone app by downloading Podcast Box for free and then going through the purchase process. By the way, I'm not absolutely certain of this, but I do believe that the app will also work on the iPod Touch. And do let me know how that works out for you. If you have any difficulties, be sure to communicate with me directly and let me know. You know, I've now been able to get it up and working on my phone, and on one of my son has downloaded it and it's working for him, and another one of my friends has downloaded it and it's working for him. So I'm feeling optimistic about it at this point. And this is a good way for you to help support Shrink Wrap Radio, and as well as having the advantages of having that app on your iPhone. Now, there's also an Android version, and the Android version is available on the Amazon Android App Store. I don't have an Android phone, so I haven't had a chance to see all this firsthand. But I have heard from a listener in the UK who tells me that it was not available for him there. It turns out that not everybody in Europe can get to the Android App Store on Amazon. The developers tell me that they are working on getting the app into the Google Android store, but they couldn't give me a date for that. So all you Android owners in the U.S., please go ahead and buy the app and give me some feedback on it. I hope you'll enjoy it. And I should hasten to say that in the Android store, it is Shrink Wrap Radio that you'll be looking for. The Android store does not use the device of the containing of an app called Podcast Box. So you will actually, you know, on the Android, get a standalone app that's called Shrink Wrap Radio. Now, there are more details about this on the Shrink Wrap Radio website. You'll see that there is now an apps tab at the top of the page. So just click on that and you'll get some more details. By the way, it's just occurred to me as a kind of footnote that there's another feature I should discuss here about the app. That is, the app streams the episodes to you. Now, this has the advantage of saving a lot of space on your smartphone. Instead of taking up space, the app itself takes up very little space, and each of the episodes is probably about 22 megabytes, which is fairly large. However, if you're going to be out of areas where you won't be able to receive a streaming signal, and you kind of know that you're going to be traveling someplace where you won't have access to the cell signal or to Wi-Fi, then you might want to save an episode or more to the phone itself. And you're able to do that in the app. There's just a, I think it's a star that you click on, and that will download it and actually save it to the device. And then later, after you've listened, if you want to, you can erase it from the device. So that's another important feature that I wanted you to know about. I'm really excited about this, as you can tell, and that's one of the reasons why I'm putting this show out early. In other big news, I'm thrilled to announce that we have our first super colossal donor at $30 a month for 12 months. You'll recall I have recently set up some donor categories and used the scheme of that's used for grading of olives, the highest level being super colossal. So a big thank goes out to Katie Morrison in Melbourne, Australia, who runs a website called morrisonmentoring.com.au. And Katie Morrison is an extraordinary person who does high-quality mentoring of secondary and what she calls tertiary students there in the Melbourne area. And one of the things I pledged to do for anybody who subscribed at the or donated at the super colossal level was to announce the name of their business on every show. Well, Katie and I had some discussion about this and mutually decided that it probably wasn't appropriate to announce it on every show, given that it is a business that's pretty much local to Melbourne, Australia. But anybody who is in the Melbourne area, please do go to Katie Morrison's site, particularly if you've got school-age kids who you're interested in getting very personalized attention and getting ahead. And she has a very interesting website and is a very fascinating person in her own right. Just go to www.morrisonmentoring.com.au. And she said that she would have made this donation even if there was no commitment to helping to advertise her business. She just values the show that much and encourages other people to donate similarly. So once again, that offer is still out there, and I do hope that other donors will step forward and follow Katie Morrison's wonderful example. Part of the value of what you get for your donations are transcripts. Every show on Wise Counsel has a transcript, and most of the shows on Shrink Wrap Radio are transcribed. And so I want to thank Emily Humphreys for her help with transcribing number 284, A Jungian Vision to Save the Planet with Jean Shinoda Bolen, MD. And so that transcript is now on the site as well. Finally, you might be interested to listen to an interview with me by Jose Drost Lopez on his Psych Talk podcast about focus groups, the unconscious, and the future of communication. And you'll find a link to that on the shrinkwrapradio.com website. Just click on the In the Media tab at the top of the page, and you'll find a link to the interview as the first item there.
Hey, jag heter Irina Almgren I Uppsala, Sverige. Hi, I am Irina Almgren in Uppsala, Sweden, host and producer of the Open Questions podcast. And you on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Thank you, Irina, another Swedish listener and also host of the very excellent Open Questions podcast. Now let's go to some recent communications from our listener community. First, I received an email from Cody, a longtime listener and correspondent in Israel, who alerted me to the fact that November 25th, the day after Thanksgiving here in the U.S., is the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. She wrote to me that women activists have marked November 25th as a day to fight violence against women since 1981. On December 17th of 1999, the United Nations General Assembly designated the 25th of November as the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. And she goes on to say the UN invited governments, international organizations, and NGOs to organize activities designed to raise public awareness of the problem on this day and an international observance. Women around the world are subject to rape, domestic violence, and other forms of violence, and the scale and true nature of the issues is often hidden. And Cody has been a tireless worker, particularly concerned with economic violence against women. And she calls our attention to the fact that there is an important conference coming up there in Israel in which those sorts of issues will be addressed. So I'm sure that Israeli listeners will be able to find that conference on Google. Earlier, I mentioned super colossal donor Katie Morrison. Let me read a little bit from one of the emails that I received from her. She wrote, "Hi, David. Good day from Melbourne, Australia. I'm so pleased that the donation worked correctly. I've become an avid fan of Shrink Wrap over recent months, and I'm really happy, super colossal happy, to be able to support your work in a tangible way. And if that gave you a shot in the arm, all the better. If you'd like to mention Morrison Mentoring, I'd be grateful, though I'm happy to support your work regardless. A tiny bit about Morrison Mentoring. I love working with young people and have at times been a teacher and a minister of religion, but starting Morrison Mentoring earlier this year in order to work with young people on my own terms. I work one-on-one with students to help them achieve success, whatever that may mean for each individual, and hopefully lay a foundation of well-being to prepare them for the rest of their lives. It's early days. I only started this work in March of this year, and I have another part-time job managing a toy library to help pay the bills. But it's good work and helps me use all the various strands of knowledge I've picked up along the way. These strands for me include experimental and theoretical physics, the communication of science, teaching English as a second language, and theological studies. Yes, I'm a geek girl. In recent years, I've become increasingly interested in psychology and intend to begin formal studies in the new year. I love listening to Shrink Wrap because therapy has become such a positive presence in my life. Thank you for the soul food and keep up the good work, Katie." So Katie, thanks again for your generosity and for your flexibility and for your encouragement. And I wish you well in your fledgling mentoring business. Jonathan wrote to say, "Hi, Dr. Dave. I'm a longtime fan of Shrink Wrap Radio and would like to suggest an interview with Dr. Mark Schiller. He is one of the researchers, as well as a local practicing clinician, utilizing data collected on individuals' EEG to inform decisions about treatment of mental illness." And then Jonathan went ahead and gave me contact information for Dr. Schiller. He said, "P.S., I loved the interview with Dr. Porges. Thanks for all your work." And Jonathan, I will add Dr. Schiller to my long list of possible guests. Thanks for that recommendation. Here's one from Maureen who writes, "Thanks, Dr. Dave. The app works fine for me. I have the iPhone 3 with the software updates, including iOS. Yay, now I don't have to search iTunes every week." And that's from Maureen, and it says, "Sent from my iPhone." So thanks for that feedback. I'm looking for more like that one. Finally, let me close with one more. This one, a comment about the previous podcast, episode number 286, Understanding Jungian Active Imagination with Monica Wickman. And this comment was posted by Alana, who writes, "After three listenings, this is the best yet. And I've been listening to your podcasts of Shrink Wrap Radio since your first with Dr. David Sowerby on intuition." Wow. "I love Dr. Wickman's explanation of Jung and his profound ideas without jargon or hyperbole. Her words felt true to the human he was. Dr. Dave, you have indeed improved over time, and your questioning, as Dr. Wickman continually pointed out, is always astute to a fault, if a little self-deprecating at times. I love the reference to Coleridge and also her subtle mention of Jungian psychology in her explanation of alchemy, the idea of light in Jung, and her beautifully articulated synthesis of the Red Book. my treasured artifact. Thank you, too, for references to Stan Grof and Barbara Hanna. Now I need to find a copy of Encounters with the Soul. I'm working on a collaborative exhibition of underwater night images of mangroves for an immersive video installation work. Yes, all symbols of the unconscious. So the discussion of Jung's waterworks, his and your fascination with water play, was particularly poignant. My linked childhood memory was of night spearfishing by underwater light with my father, and this has fueled my creative ideas of late. There was so much in this that was food for my soul. Thank you from the deepest places in me. I found Dr. Wickman's conclusion regarding the Red Book very interesting. The arrival as the womb makes me wonder, did June Singer explore the parallel female journey to wholeness? Women may come to wholeness from the opposite direction, knowing the connection to the world, earth, being, as we are receptive and we have to learn how to be in the world, how to express and to speak authentically in the outside to the other. I would love to hear this explored in deep conversation. Thank you again, subtle, perceptive, giving you, and brilliant, open, articulate Dr. Wickman. I love that you keep ego out of shrink wrap radio, Alana. Alana, thanks so much for that very thoughtful and encouraging post. And I'm not sure that I keep ego out of shrink wrap radio, but do try to keep it in proportion. So with that, we'll wrap up yet another episode of Shrink Wrap Radio. Remember, you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. You can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype, where I'm ShrinkPod, and you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622, or better yet, you can use the iPhone or Android app to do that. Thanks to Dr. Ofer Zur for sharing his expertise in the realm of e-psychotherapy. And if all goes as planned, my next episode will be with Michael Stone, psychotherapist, yoga teacher, Buddhist teacher, author, and activist, and we'll be discussing the intersection of spirituality and activism in the light of the Occupy movement, which has spread around the globe. So until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.